ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरपुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीम् राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तौ यस्य प्रथितकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। I'll begin a discussion of various aspects of the pilgrimage, elements of pilgrimage, in little detail for each one. The ones I'm planning to discuss are tapasya, austerity, bathing, yajna, sacrifice, puja. Well, I may not discuss, and prasada. And there's one more I'll discuss. I'll keep it a secret for now. So tapasya, it's expected that those who go on pilgrimage, they're going for a religious purpose. There has to be some uplift, because the idea is, even if one is going for a material purpose, that let me get my visa to America, or let me pass my exam, let me be free from debts, or whatever. Still, one has to uplift oneself, because one has to at least approach the level of the person being supplicated, the demigod. That may not apply so much in the case of Shakta worship at the lower level, where it's considered that she's a very kind and loving mother, indulgent, but she's not indulgent, but there's some feeling like that. And with Ganga, it's not so much uplift as going down physically into the river, but still we're approaching Mother Ganga, but with great awe and respect also. Bondo mui shavadhana mate. That's the attitude is stated, having stated in respect to the Guru. Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. The lotus feet of the spiritual master are the abode of pure devotional service. And I pray to those feet, sa avadhana, with great attention, or with great caution. Sa avadhan means attention, and savadhan means with attention, means be careful. That's the common usage of savadhan, be careful, be attentive. But in approaching the gods, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's an idea, we have to uplift, we have to purify ourselves. That's That's one reason for undergoing tapasya, because we spend our whole life trying to enjoy this material world. Even those following the Vedic culture, they have to follow many rules and regulations which restrict immediate sense enjoyment in many ways, especially those who are living as actual brahmanas. The main sense gratification for brahmanas is good food, brahmana bhojana priya. They like, but they don't have much in the line of sense, and that also twice a day, that's it. You can drink buttermilk as much as you like throughout the day, but two meals a day. Talking about traditional brahmanas here, not today, those who go by the name of brahmanas. Otherwise, the way they're raised, we were just discussing yesterday, they don't get much of a kick out of sex either. It's done mostly as a duty. With the understanding that Brahmaiva bhavati. One who knows Brahma becomes Brahma. If you know what is the spiritual nature, then you enter that spiritual nature, or you become on that level. But that requires purification. The understanding is actually there in all religious systems, but one way or another. There's austerities also in various religious processes. It's not expected that the priest will be the priest in a Christian church will be the local disco dancing champion, for instance. It's not, it doesn't go together, or that he'll be the local mafia boss on the side. It's expected he lives a very pure and detached life. Gravity should be there, not that he's simply enjoying himself. Because the idea is there that even though it's not specifically formulated in other religious systems, it's formulated in the Vedic Jnanakanda, which we find at the opening of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Vishnachakravarti Thakur says the opening is Karma Kanda, but there's a lot of discussion there also about becoming detached from all, becoming detached from this world, and it's understood that to approach God one has to be not a sense enjoyer. So that's a big difference. We can't say that going to Disneyland is the same as going to a holy place, because the idea of going to Disneyland is to enjoy yourself, and on the way you try to enjoy yourself also, and on the way back you try to enjoy yourself, and there's no motive of purification. So we can't say that going to a holy place, it's the Hindu way of going for a holiday. It's not exactly the English word holiday and the Hindu Tirtha Yatra, it's not the same thing. There's no real correspondence. Now, there is pilgrimage in the Western culture also. And there's austerity also, but that austerity in the Christian tradition, they have the idea for mortification of the flesh. In other words, you do something, you suffer. There's some idea of sharing in the suffering of Christ. Some idea is like that. I was staying, shortly before I joined this movement, I was staying in a Christian monastery in Ireland, not as a visitor, not as a novice monk. And they were vegetarians, which is unusual among Christians. And I asked one of the senior monks there, why are you vegetarian? And he said, for mortification of the flesh. The idea is that actually we'd like to eat meat, but we don't do so because it's Some we don't do it deliberately, so we suffer. And the concept of mortification of the flesh is that you suffer and you share in the suffering of Jesus. And then you have things like on Good Friday, which is just past, the day on which they say Jesus was crucified. Then on Good Friday, in some parts of the world, you have people carrying around crosses and getting whipped as Jesus was whipped. And in Shia Islam, there's self-flagellation with chains. And in this Taipusam here. Around here, not much, huh? Is it? You have also, they must have it here, huh? Yeah. I haven't seen it here. It seems to be in some pockets more than others. Definitely in Trichandor, it must be very big, that Taipus. And then they do things like, you know, they put the spears through their mouth and their tongue and pull chariots with chains attached to their backs with hooks. But that's different. It's in the mode of ignorance, definitely. But the idea is what? To get the blessings of the Spirit and to show that you did it, right? You have faith in the Spirit, and if you have full faith, then no blood comes. Is that the idea? Something like that. You wouldn't know so much, but you're from a different culture altogether. So that's the idea. And then if you have full faith, then you can run on the hot coals and everything. You can do all kinds of things. So this is in the mode of ignorance. It's deliberately inflicting suffering on oneself for the sake of what people call spiritual uplift, but it's not really spiritual. They don't know what spiritual means. Spiritual means to know who is God, what is our relationship with Him, and to act in that relationship. Sambandha abhideya prayojan. Or at least to have some concept of aham brahmasmi. I am spiritual, beyond the modes of material nature, even if one doesn't have a personalistic conception. So the whole idea in Vedic culture of tapasya, austerity, is that we, in this material world, we are bound up by desires for sense gratification. And tapasya is supposed to bring down the temperature, the fire of lust. It just goes on burning, the fire of desire, to bring that down. Of course, we find in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam there's a discussion of that one may, or in the Bhagavad Gita, niraha rasya dehenaha rasa, niraha, don't give any food to the senses. But it's not that they lose the desire for food. It may flare up even more if one has simply suppressed the desires. And I'll give another anecdote from my life in this regard. There was one brahmachari in our ashram in Dhaka. Young Bengali man. He's an old Bengali man now. And he would often get very angry. And we had a maid, a widow. There were many widows in Bangladesh at that time, a youngish woman. And he would get angry at her, and I said to her, apologizing, and she said, "Brahmacharito." He's a brahmachari. As if, what do you expect? It's because just that word, one word, brahmachari, that's all. And then it's the idea. I thought about it and thought, well, the idea is that he's suppressing desires, and therefore he has the tendency to get angry. And it was almost she expected that. She didn't think it was. She was okay with it. Oh. We have in Mahabharata also the story of that yogi sitting under the tree and a bird pooped on him, and he looked up at the bird and burned it to ashes. And then he came in the town for begging, and one woman came out and said, "Just wait." And he came back, and then she came back after some, saying, "Hey, don't get angry with me because I'm late. I'm not a bird on a tree that you can burn up." I thought, "Oh, how did she know? And how do you know?" "Well, I get my power from serving my husband. That's why I didn't attend to you immediately, because I was tending to my husband." So the idea, by performing austerities, you can not, well, you suppress desires, but they come out in, like holding your breath, that it, when you're on the plane, and it comes out, your ears, the pressure, the air is trying to get out through another hole. So, what do we do? No, we don't too much. In Vaishnavism, we don't have so much to pass. It's not even part of Vaishnavism. It's not mentioned as one of the limbs of bhakti, to perform austerities. But it is mentioned. One should observe vows of Kartik. One should follow Ekadashi fasting. And then, Krishna Hetave, what is that? Seen anyone know from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? I just can't remember it now. That one should accept things or reject things on the basis of Krishna's pleasure. Bhog and Tyag, those are the words used. Krishnate Bhoga Tyag, something like that. That one should accept things or not accept things on the basis of whether Krishna is pleased. We have in Buddha's teaching the middle path. He had taken up severe austerities, and he realized severe austerities don't lead to nirvana, because he still hadn't nirvana'd at that point. That was a time, we understand, in Indian history where there were extreme austerities were considered to be, there were the shramans, a sect who undertook severe austerities. And really, even today you'll find some yogi who's just stand, he never sits down or lies down. He just stands up all his life, and then his legs are all withered away, and or someone's held his hand in the air for 20 years and it's all atrophied, and it's, or they never cut their nails. But what's the use? What's the point? Buddha came to the understanding, what's the point? And he recommended the middle path. Not too much, not too little. Of course, when you have a culture where there's extreme austerity and you say the middle path, then it's still pretty austere. It's something like saying that you go to buy something and then, how much is a kilo of mangoes? 20 crores of rupees. I think, well, that sounds too much. I'd better bring it down. Okay, only 10 crores of rupees. Okay, 15 crores. But it's far, far exaggerated. I mean, that's a ridiculous example, but far exaggerated. So when Buddha says the middle path, it's still pretty austere. And that's already there in Gita anyway, that the middle path, is it not? Natyashnatastu yogosti nachaikanta manashnataha naswapna jati shilasya jagrato naivachaduna yukta ahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapnavabodhasya yogo bhavati dukaha. It's already there in Gita before Buddha had the brilliant idea that one who eats too much or sleeps too much or eats too little or sleeps too little cannot properly execute yoga. One should be moderate in one's activities of eating. Recreation, stated right, so that gives the idea there's some recreation. yuktahara, vihara, in one's all one's activities and endeavors, sleeping not too much, not too little, but bhogantyag, the Vaishnava understanding, bhogantyag, what we accept for the senses and what we don't accept for the sake of Krishna. What Krishna wants us to do. Once Srila Prabhupada asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that how is it that we find among the greatest devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I mean really, really at the top, he didn't say this, but he just mentioned the names, Ramananda Rai and Rupa Goswami. One renounced everything, fabulous wealth, to live Tyaktva Turnamashesha Mandalapati Srinin Sada Tuchavat Bhudva Dina Ganesh. You just Kopina Kantash, just left all society and name and fame and wealth and all this, and had Kopin Kanta, a rag quilt for the winter. Kopina, and not mentioned, but Kamandalu is there. Three kas. Kopin, Kamandalu, and Kanta. So he was living a very austere life. And Ramananda Rai remained in family life. He didn't renounce. And he had a full pension from Prataparudra Maharaj. So he was living very opulently. So Prabhupada asked, how is it there's a difference between... And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied that it's not a question of living in the world or renouncing it. It's a matter of doing whatever is required for our service to Krishna. So for Ramananda Rai, it wasn't required to renounce the world. And in fact, his doing so might have been an obstacle or not very pleasing. I mean, it was Ramananda Rai who told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Stane Stita Shrutika. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this. You stay in your position. So, tapasya is there in Vaishnava, just like observing some vow in Kartik, but it's not specifically stated as tapasya in and of itself. The idea is that one should restrict sense gratification for the idea that Krishna will be pleased. Krishna likes if we observe Kartik months. He likes if we observe it's Radharani's month. So if we do something to please her, Krishna becomes very pleased. Similarly, following Ekadashi, Harivasa, that then is known as the day of Hari. So if we observe vows on Ekadashi, Krishna becomes pleased. So for Vaishnavas, the element of restricting, limiting, or giving up sense gratification to help control the senses, it's certainly there in the neophyte stage. And we shouldn't think we're free from neophyte tendency. We shouldn't prematurely think that. And Srila Prabhupada, he's well known for encouraging devotees to take lots of prasadam in the early days. But then later he instructed about not eating too much. Sannyasis, especially. There was one incident I'm aware of in which... Actually, two incidents I'm aware of in which he chastised his sannyasis for indulging in nice food or too much food. He wrote in one purport that if one becomes too fat, that is an obstacle on the path of spiritual advancement. So in this way, some austerity, not indulging the body, that is helpful for devotees, but for controlling the senses. But their real thought is, what does Krishna want me to do? We have also the example of Hayagriva Brahmachari, later Srila Bhakti Dayata Madhav Maharaj, who was being sent on just suddenly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told him, you go, leave immediately, go to Mathura and make some arrangements there for our upcoming program. And so that was early in the morning. He was told he had to leave immediately. It was Ekadashi, so it was a fasting day. Then how is he expected to go? Long, grueling journey. He won't get any food till he reaches there, because he's only going to take prasad, and there's no prasad being cooked on that day in the month. So he told him, let him take prasad and go. Greens. Oh, but we find in the Shastra that if you take grains on Ekadashi, you go to hell. But if on the order of the guru you take, for the service, if it's required for the service of Krishna, that's the understanding. This comes first, above all rules. That's exceptional. One should not take that as a license to do ordinarily, but when such an order comes from such an elevated guru as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, then can be accepted as such. So there's a little background why there should be austerity on the pilgrimage. And generally that feeling is there also, that we're going on pilgrimage, so why should we indulge in nice food? Rather, we should restrict, even though we're walking all day, we should restrict maybe one time a day food, very simple food. that's itself. We find in Bhagavatam that in after Kartik, the gopis who they were performing Katyayani Vrata, beseeching Katyayani that Krishna could become their husband. And they only ate once a day, Havishyana. That's just rice boiled with dal, and that's it. No salt, no ghee, nothing. And it's cold after Kartik. That's the season when you want to eat ghee and some heavy food, but they're just taking once a day. So that's a great austerity. And on pilgrimage, there's a feeling that it seems wrong, out of place, even without telling anyone that we're going on pilgrimage, therefore we should cut down on our sense gratification. Or even bodily, what we our normal requirements. Now, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's recorded that Pratap Rudra Maharaj was surprised on seeing the devotees arrive in Puri from Bengal and seeing that they had not shaved, which is required when one enters a holy place. And the Pratap Rudra Maharaj came to know that the arrangements were being made for them to take prasad. And the first day on arriving in a holy place, one should shave, go and bathe in the required place, a river or in Puri, in the sea, I suppose, or Indrajumna Sarovar or Narendra Sarovar, or at that time the Ganga Mata's, can't remember what it's called, Kunda wasn't there. but they hadn't done any of that, and he was surprised, and he asked Sarvabhauma Acharya why that is, and Sarvabhauma Acharya said, see, all these rules are meant for people who are on the Vidhi Marg, the path of rules and regulations, but these devotees are on the Raga Marg, where pure attachment to Krishna takes precedence. So for them, they don't have to follow these rules, and not only do they not have to follow, but If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is arranging prasad for you, you're not going to say no. You should take it. Yeah, but nevertheless, there's, even though we're going to get the favor of a deity, and we expect they'll be very kind, but we also have to show that we're serious about, we're making some effort to get their attention. So going on pilgrimage, walking is the standard. Walking barefoot. One who goes to Prayag in a conveyance goes to hell, and his libations are refused. His offer. Now everyone goes nowadays by train or bus, mostly, isn't it? I guess you should walk at least walk the last part. But the real thing is, one should walk from wherever one is going. So there are many compromises in the modern day. The British advertise that they're making trains so you can go to holy places. See, it's good for you, you can go to holy places more easily. They're telling the Indian population. Although their real aim was to facilitate the movement of raw goods to the ports, especially Calcutta, so they could ship them out to England and process it there. So it's a standard thing, going, one has to go barefoot around Varanasi. There's a parikrama path. It's quite longer than the one around Vrindavan, but not longer than the one going around Mathura. So going around Mathura, one's supposed to go the whole way barefoot, which is difficult because a lot of the paths at that season when people do the parikrama journey, well, our devotees do it in Kartik, although it's supposed to be done according to Narayan Bhatta Goswami, who gave the rules for this. It's supposed to be done just after Janmashtami, and it's a 48-day pilgrimage, I think. So, but that's also very difficult because rain and everything becomes mud and sometimes very hot, sometimes very wet. But the thorns on the path, not easy to go barefoot unless you're practiced to go barefoot. And then you get thick skin on the heel, so you don't notice anything when you're walking, but it's an austerity, you have to take it. From all over West Bengal, a certain season, you'll see usually young men going on a path with this, walking barefoot, with this bamboo over their shoulder, with the two baskets on the side, and you see in Mayapur, and they go from Mayapur to Tarakeshwar. It's probably the only prominent Shiva temple in the whole of West or East Bengal. Just trying to think of something in East Bengal. No, I mean, of course there are Shiva temples, but it's a prominent one. So they walk. It's a long way to walk. It takes several days, but they walk. They carry Ganga Jal, walking barefoot. Some go by Dandavat Parikrama. You've seen around Govardhan people doing Dandavat Parikrama. And that's to show respect by offering Dandavat at every step. Parikrama in itself is offering respect, but Dandavat Parikrama more so. But that's a great austerity also. A very difficult thing to do, no doubt. And people may do all kinds of things. They can dream up all kinds of things, closing their mouth with a handkerchief so they don't speak at all. But we don't do that because we want to chant Hare Krishna. The journey itself is an austerity. Just even going is an austerity. Even nowadays with the with the buses and everything. But it, especially for people previously, they just stay in their house, in their village, and they may never go outside. Well, they don't have any reason to go outside. Only when they go on pilgrimage, which might be once in a lifetime or once every year. And it's disconcerting. Everything you're used to isn't there anymore. Regular meals, regular place to rest. And it's difficult when you're not used to it. So just to leave home where everything is settled and comfortable, that in itself is an austerity. But then people gladly undertake it, because they feel happy. It's a conundrum that people, at least in the Vedic culture, generally when you see people going on pilgrimage, they're very happy to do so. It's not in this mood you get in Christianity and Islam of religion is something very grave and some heavy dude called God, and he's out to get you if you. It's something like there's the divider in the road, and if you cross over 1 inch, then the police are ready to throw you in jail. So it's something like that. You got the feeling that God's watching you, and if you do anything wrong, slightly, you're going to get burned in hell. But it's a different outlook. In the Vedic culture, it's especially the bhakti culture, is very joyful. And even though people are undertaking austerities, they're very happy to do so. And you find whether it's at the highest level, which means going to Krishna, or getting down a bit, ayappas. They like to do, they're in generally a happy mood, even though they're undertaking austerities. And like I say, even today, the journey, it's much easier than it used to be, but it's not exactly easy to be crammed in a train with a carriage that's supposed to seat 72 people, and you have 172 ayappas in there. And or they hire a tempo traveler and put in far more people than it was designed, and all their luggage and everything. So there is austerity, but one is supposed to seek that and to be. It's not written you should be happy to do this, but a sense of pleasure. Even if it's not spelled out or enunciated, that I'm doing this for the pleasure of Krishna. May Krishna be pleased with this. So before one starts on a pilgrimage, there's a sankalpa. Before doing any vow, Ekadashi vow or whatever, that I'm going to go on this pilgrimage for the pleasure of the deity, and I'm going to follow these austerities, this, that. It's a whole ceremony with mantras stated, and then one sticks to that. So that's an essential element of pilgrimage, is austerity. And in general, we can say Vrindavan is very much a place of austerity compared to Mayapur nowadays, although Mayapur used to be also. For Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, living in Mayapur was very great austerity, but he liked it, he was inclined to that. Puri also, there's Jagannath is very merciful, gives his prasadam, all varieties that people can enjoy taking Jagannath's prasad. But even then we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even though his devotees were trying to feed him as nicely as possible, because he was in the sannyasa order of life, he was trying to avoid that. Srila Prabhupada wrote in a letter that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking prasad, but on principle he was trying to avoid. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna.